You've heard it every way. A dog will have his day. But when it comes to wailing, dogs ain't got a thing to say. So they can do the waiting, cause I ain't hesitating. The future's round the corner, so for now I'm gonna play. Now's the time to wail. Not later, but right now's the time.
Alto sax and vocals with Now's the Time. This is from her 1962 album, Bird Call, paying homage to her mentor and hero, Charlie Bird Parker, Elvira Vi Red, who entered the jazz world at the bebop, hard bop, and post bop stage, was performing on her own and with her band and with big names in jazz since the 1950s. And then she decided that when she, of course, grew older, she is 90 years old now, devoted the last years or decades, actually, of her life to teaching music. An unusual lady indeed. And she was one of the very first women in jazz, and she entered the genre when there weren't very many women at all, and if there were, they weren't taken too seriously. They didn't have great opportunities, but Vi Red continues to be an exception, and many more years of good health to her. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and I want to talk today about taking a pause from all the craziness that's going on and doing some self-inventory politically, of course. We want to concentrate on the question about our political outlooks. What is it? Do we understand who we are politically? And that would cause us to delve into areas that we normally don't delve into. We just automatically consign our political allegiance to a party. I want to ask us to stop doing that. It's not good. Rather than consign your political beliefs or your political ideology to a party first, how about you reverse the process and start with yourself first? If there's a party out there, or is there an entity out there that is compatible with you, well, you know, explore that. But it is my experience that we develop our ideology. We think about politics, our personal brand of politics, by importing beliefs and reacting to what is out there. It may not necessarily be good. It may not necessarily jive with our own personal views about what politics should be all about, what it should accomplish, what we want it to be, and what we want it to do. So we don't think about it that way. It is a rare thing to me, in my experience, it's a rare thing that people, irrespective of what's going on outside, you know, who's a Democrat, who is a Republican, who's a conservative, it is a rare thing that people construct their own political ideology based on their own beliefs, their own exploration of what politics means. And we get into this thing of seeing the world through the lens of the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, when perhaps neither of these is adequate. Neither of these will get the job done of meshing your personal ideology with a collective of people, the best that you can find out there, suitable and compatible with your beliefs. It's always the other way around. We choose party. We don't choose ideology. We don't choose that personalized interpretation of politics, because we don't even understand it. We're just conditioned to respond as a kind of reflex. Who should we be siding with, as opposed to what should we be siding with? All right, so the exercise today, I'd like you to discuss, because you're always generous to pull us inside and give us an idea, give us an individualized tour of how your brain is working. Tell us what your political thinking or philosophy is now, as far as you're able to define it, as far as you're able to say what it is. And you have a great deal of latitude here, because I'm operating on the premise that most of us really don't know. We think we know, we say we know, but we really haven't stopped to examine this particular question. So what is your political thinking or philosophy now, at this moment in your life? And what has influenced or continues to influence your way of thinking? Yep, it's a deep philosophical question, but you know, I've been wanting to ask that for a long time. And personally, my political thinking, much to my amazement, has remained kind of constant, but I have had to retool many times. And I've had to re-examine my political philosophy, not just based on events, although that does account for a lot, but based on my own evolution. What am I thinking? What is my purpose? In terms of politics, what is my purpose? Who best, or what best articulates that? With whom or with what am I most compatible? Where is my political allegiance? And how or why does that entity deserve it? You get it? That's where we're going. Because we still, in my view, just from observation, we're very much conditioned, and it has worked perfectly. We're very much conditioned to view the world in terms of party. And as we can see, that is almost suicidal if we intend to have to come to terms with ourselves about what our politics is to be all about. So 888-874-4888. I'd like you to help us understand it, how this process works for you. Have you ever done inventory? I mean, really deep inventory to find out what kind of brand, what kind of political brand are you, and based on what? What continues to shape your political understanding and your political vision? And how does that in turn mesh with the what we consider a kind of mandate, your own personal mandate in terms of changing or affecting in a positive way the political evolution in our society? Can you help us today? Give us a little peek into how it has worked for you, or not worked even. How has your political vision, your political understanding changed? Have you taken the time to examine for contradictions? And how do you resolve political contradictions in your life? You may think one way, but the collective that you see yourself as belonging to is thinking another way. How have you, you know, navigated the process of resolving it? Or maybe you haven't resolved it, but you're moving in a particular direction nonetheless. All right. We have our first taker, Lincoln from Mount Vernon. How are you, Lincoln?
Hey, how are you doing, Utrecht?
I'm hanging in. How about you?
I'm persevering. And I would like for you to stop saying hanging and say persevering.
I'm persevering.
Yeah. My political philosophy started when I was about 11 or 12 years of age. It was when I was first introduced to Caribbean history, and also from observation, when I started watching what was happening to the poor. At that age, I started imagining myself, I used to imagine myself as the leader of the world. And I used to imagine setting up a government where everyone would be fed, everyone would have housing. And I used to imagine setting up a government where there would be justice. It was also when I was in Jamaica and I started hearing about what was happening to black people. Because when I was a young boy in Jamaica, I dreamed of coming to the United States and joining the Black Panther Party, you know. And mine was, and you know, there are two parties in Jamaica, the PNP and the Labour Party. And I never saw myself as being a part of either of the two, because all I saw was, I remember my father was PNP, but all I saw was that these politicians would promise the people things, but then the people, homelessness was continuing, people were, you know, impoverished, crime was waging, etc. So mine was not some Marxist or anything like that. I just saw myself setting up a government where everyone would be fed, everyone would be guaranteed housing. Because from an early age, I thought that the only purpose of government was for the good of the people, and that politicians were not celebrities. I remember back in my first year of college, I met a professor. His name was Cliff Lashley, and you know, he saw that I had an interest. He was from Rutgers. He saw I had an interest in politics, and Michael Manley was coming to the United States, and he convened it so that I could come to the party to meet Michael Manley. And I remember when I met Michael, I didn't. I was not interested in his PNP nor the labor rights view. And I spent my time because he was very accessible, Prime Minister. So I spent my time telling him of my vision of politics, and telling him about setting up a government where the people would be attended to, and not him nor his cronies or whoever aggrandizing themselves, So I do not, even though I will say to people, vote for Cynthia McKinley, etc., or vote for the Green Party, I would just suggest this to people because it's the best part of whatever is available, but I think
where are you now? Where is your political thinking at this point in your life? What is your political philosophy? You've told us a lot of that.
It still is the same as when I was a child. I still see government, the purpose of government is just for the good of the people.
Right.
Politics is very simple, but we have complicated it.
You're saying that government, you've also observed that government doesn't do that. So how do you reconcile these two things that are opposed to each other? The idea that government should be of service to the people, and the reality, at least this is what I'm getting, the reality that government doesn't actually do that.
And I think the people are to be blamed, because no matter how much you speak to people, they're always talking from some book and they're always quoting to you from Marx or somebody. And they're never talking about politics as a real thing. And they're always pursuing politicians as personalities. If you watch what happens at the Hillary Clinton, the Trumpites, or the Obamaites, or the Nixonites, or the Reaganites, it's not really from a true understanding of what should politics do for me and my brothers and sisters. I think politics is embraced more like a symbolism thing, and because of that, we do not keep politicians accountable. Look at Patrice Lumumba. Patrice Lumumba was a postman. Here in this country, every time they talk about a politician, they're always telling this one have an economic degree from here or there, Harvard. What does that do for us? With all their Ivy League education, the people are still suffering. With all their Ivy League education, they still keep sending the people to war, dying for themselves and not for us. And I listen to people on WBI, etc.
But because I think you're straying, I want you to be on point here. So, with all of this information that you have acquired through personal observation, through your own thinking, where does that leave you today? What kind of a political entity are you?
I am one who embraced, that's the reason why I'm actually so mad at Obama, because I embraced what Gaddafi had done for the people. And Gaddafi came the closest to what I see a government should do. Gaddafi and Fidel Castro were, it was really about the people and not about, imagine somebody like Gaddafi who gave the people all what the people should want. And we watch people destroy a man in a government like this, and we are not outraged. To me, that says about the people. Even the people who speak against Trump, I say they're all just like him. They don't even realize what they are. Imagine a government like Gaddafi's government, where the people had everything, free housing, free education, free hospitalization. If you want to go to a school and Libya didn't have it, they gave you a stipend to go. What more could you want? I'm not going to give my parents a house unless all the people own their own house. And we watch the things that we all as people should be pursuing and wanting a government to pursue. We watch a government like that destroyed. And we're more outraged about Trump rather than being outraged about something like that, which was done, orchestrated by the people, the so-called intellectuals of this country. That tells me that when I listen to people on WBR, etc., and even your show, I said to myself, well, what are they talking about? It's all just rhetoric. They're not really about, you know, the nuts and bolts of politics. The nuts and bolts of politics is to make sure that the government delivers for us.
Well, you got to start it today. Okay. Sobering thoughts to consider. And thanks for sharing your personal journey and your evolution politically. And I think there's a lot to consider there for everybody listening. Thanks, Lincoln, for getting us started today. 888-874-4888. The question is, what is your political evolution? Where are you now politically and philosophically, as opposed to some difficult to define allegiance to a party? Come election time, and you quickly affiliate with a party, and it's all about deciding how you're going to vote. That couldn't possibly be all there is to a political philosophy. So I'm asking, how did you develop, or how have you developed, or even have you developed a political philosophy that is in line with your own political thinking? And how do you mesh that? How do you work it so that you have to find a way, some kind of a compatibility between what you are politically and what a party is politically? This is a major problem, I think, in our communities, that and Lincoln expressed it very clearly. You have a very strong sense of what a political party should be because of your own political evolution and consciousness. But there isn't a structure available to give momentum and give voice to what you believe. So then most of us are stuck. And most of us are unhappy because what do? We have to concede one way or the other. Whatever it is we believe, we have to hold our noses, it seems, most of the time. When it comes to voting, we are forced now to hold our noses and vote for an apparatus that we know is not ready to perform as we expect. It's a very serious issue. And I'm asking, how do you deal with it? Jeff from New Jersey, how do you deal with this? And where are you actually politically?
Politically? I'm in the self-sufficient mode, which means cities and states cannot rely on Washington at this point. So cities and states need to do what they need to do to make themselves pretty solvent. And that trickles down into your community, that you do in your community what needs to be done and you don't wait on anyone else. I think our problem in the black community is not sending allegiance to one of the parties, because if there's only two parties in the game, you got to choose one. You choose the best that you can do. However, our problem is that we do not see ourselves. We do not see ourselves as a force. We do not see ourselves as leaders. We've been trained that way, to not believe that we can do these things. Even when we get leaders, they're either propped up and they have faults which are, you know, exposed by the man. And the man does that on purpose so that he can maintain control. But we need to understand how powerful, and if not powerful, that we can control our own thing.
I'll ask you directly. Have you yourself gone through an evolution in terms of your political understanding of your self and your own power. What was it, and what is it now?
I was a Democrat, you know, and we voted the Democrats. And again, I think that we need to also take a step back and say, look, Democrats did some good things for black people. Bill and Hillary Clinton came in, that sort of shifted. And over that time that we gained things like the civil rights and the equal opportunity for work and et cetera, the grants and stuff like that people have for school, and that stuff has been systematically repealed and systematically taken away. But we did have gains. So being a Democrat at that time was in our best interest. However, we need to switch with the times. The times has been that the Democrats are now more Republican, and Republicans are more insane. So in my perspective, I had to pull away from the Democratic Party and actually look at the political system. The political system changed. I mean, there were Republicans that I would have voted for president, like Jack Kemp, because they did things for the black community in the guise of conservatism, but that conservatism would have made black communities more self-sufficient. And by example, I mean, he went out and he helped people who were in projects gain money to buy the apartment buildings that they were in, so they had control over their thing, and they had ownership of something, which is a whole different mindset. You know, it's a good thing for the people. But, you know, again, that money was, again, taken away. And I've watched Democrats in a city here actually take that money away from the people who worked 5 years to get it and then sent it back. So, and then no chance of really getting that money back again. So they couldn't control their destiny. And consequently, the homes were destroyed and built for, you know, contractor to make some money. So what I've, you know, come to realize is that the money in politics is something that, you know, you have to trace to understand why certain things are going on and why certain things are happening. And then realize that the money in politics are not going to help the ordinary man. You know, it's
but
a game.
That puts you, Jeff, as into being an island unto yourself, because no political entity out there is doing what you are hoping that they can do if they understand or respect the investment people like you are making in their respective parties. But they're not doing that. So where does that leave you?
That leaves me with doing the community work, even if it's just within the family and extended family, to make sure that we have what we need. If there is a crisis, we have a plan, and that we support each other and get each other through. We can extend that into the neighborhood and work with neighborhood kids. And my vision is a little more on the long term. We're not going to change anything in the next, you know, actually in 2 years, I think we can change some things. But the long term thing is to set up, build it from the ground up. And yeah, I'm not necessarily working alone. There are other people out there that feel the same way or are engaging in these things. People who are doing co-ops and, you know, whether they know it or not, one here, one there, eventually the word will spread and eventually we'll make the connection so that it will be a movement that will be a solid base. And I believe in that, because there's just too many people out there who just said, threw their hands up at both parties and walked away and are independent or who will not vote. Sometimes, you know, you vote as close you can to what you believe. And that's how you kind of create alliances. You know, the thing is right now we need to vote to do what is right and to protest what is right. We just have a lot of obstacles. But we I think it's out there. People are making changes in their lives, that are going to dictate what they're going to believe in politically. For instance, when you do have a co-op or you do have a farm, then, you know, it's going to be in your interest to go to the state and say, you know, no pesticides, no GMOs, you know, let's have labeling. So my product is not grouped in with this one. So your lifestyle is going to start to dictate to you what kind of legislation you need to help sustain it. So as long as we begin at that grassroots and we begin to change individually, it's going to come together where we're going to have to move on the state level and begin to change. By that time, we will have what they call, I guess, critical mass, where there will be groups of people who will understand what's going on. It's about getting this education out there about what is best for us. You know, when we can continue to have these conversations about, say, 5G networks or pesticides or so on and so forth, people will begin to, you know what they want for their family rather than being told what they want for their family. And when they know what they want for their family, like I said, it will translate into pushes for legislation to help you achieve those goals. But it's got to be a little bit of, you know, on the lifestyle change.
Well, you iterated a whole bunch of very interesting ideas. Thank you so much for contributing today, Jeff. We go to Brooklyn. David from Brooklyn, how do you relate to this question? What has your own evolution, your political evolution been? Where are you today, and with what is it compatible?
Well, you know, I've made a fantastic evolution. I mean, from a youngster going into the military and spending a lot of years in the South, living in the Southland in Texas and Tennessee and Florida and Georgia, and getting to the point where I am now. And I've reached a point where this political system that we have now, I see as hopeless. The system we have is nothing but a large game. It's, you know, the same name as my book, Playing the Game. And there's no hope for any kind of reformation of a system that is based on American capitalism and the intersection of that capitalism with racism on steroids, that can do anything in terms of serving the interests of the people who live here. The political system here is based on serving the needs of the ruling class, the corporate class, and the people at the very top, period. And people have to get it through their heads that you're never going to go anywhere staying with the two parties that are run by the ruling class who runs the country. And that's hopeless. That's hopeless. So when I found that out, I certainly got out of the Democratic Party where I had registered one time, and I released myself from that, and I got to the point where I'm not going to pull a lever for any one of those two parties, the Republican Party or Democratic Party. The point is, you got to start somewhere, and I think you have to start now. You can't just think that you're going to reform by, you know, working with this corrupt group that runs the parties in power right now. There's no way that the ruling class is going to do something to destroy itself and help the people. This is not a place where you have an economy that is based on good for the people. This is good, what's good for those at the top, and that's the way it runs. That's why you have poverty. You're not going to get a ruling class party that is interested in capitalism, worrying about all the things, the social things that people need, health and homeless homes for the people and things that are really needed. It is impossible. So when you pull a lever or check off a box for one of those two divisions of the same capitalist party, you know, you're not going anywhere. You got to get to the point where you just cease and desist from supporting those two parties. So that's where I am, and I think that people have to see the light. There's no way that you are going to find these things out by listening to the corporate media, television, radio, or print. You got to do some digging to find out how it works and how you are being played. So to me, it's just like what I said about the title I gave for my book. It's nothing but a big game and you losing. And the people are losing. And American capitalism is the most virulent capitalism in the world. This is not Scandinavia. This is a capitalism that has racism as its major force to keep it going, and the people are being tricked every day. There's nothing but trickery going on by those who rule. And don't be impressed by people who happen to have the same melanin content or look like you, because they go along with the game that the ruling class is running. And so we've got to get that in mind. So don't be impressed with someone's plumbing or their own gender or someone's color like Obama or whatnot. It doesn't make any difference. Was part of the problem and still is part of the problem. So, you know, we have to get to that point where we give up completely the idea of kind of reforming this one-party Republican-Democrat divisions, and they're going to do what's good for the people who live in. That's impossible. They're not going to do for the good of the people in the world. That's why you have imperialism. They're butting in and interfering in every country around the world. So with capitalism, the idea is to create wealth for those who are the capitalists, not what's good for the people in this country or any country around the world. It's just to make profit for themselves. And another thing that has brought me to a point, I hear people talking all the time about, well, the demographics are changing and whatnot. That doesn't mean that much. The demographics in a place like South Africa, where you have maybe 80% of the people is, you know, Africans, indigenous Africans, that the Europeans still run things. Well, it wouldn't be any different here if you have more brown people and more black people in the population here. That doesn't mean that those people are going to be in charge of anything, and that they're going to be able to implement things that are beneficial to all the people. So let's forget about this, just this coloration thing. We have to think that the system of capitalism and imperialism is for the benefit of the few rather than the many. And we should see that with all the wealth that's being created by the billionaires all over the world, but people don't get it. So I'm not going to be going back to the Republican or Democratic Party. That's impossible, and I think that a lot of us should join in that task to do something else besides thinking that we're going to get somewhere. And the only way, as I have said before, and I think it is important to be redundant on these, you got to put a hurt into these capitalists by doing what's important to them hurt them in the pocketbook. Stop buying their stuff, you know, doing boycotts, doing things that hurt them. That's the only way you're going to have some kind of change that benefits the people of the country and the world. That's the way I see it.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for your instruction and for sharing your personal evolution. 888-874-4888. This is a profound question because it forces us to come to terms with how we're going to navigate and negotiate this so-called partnership, if there's going to be one, between an apparatus that supposedly in turn will advocate what we are advocating, and a party system that has its own ideas about what it's supposed to do. How is our political conviction, our sense of what is right, what is appropriate, what should be pursued in the interest of a collective? Do we even recognize how and why we are at odds with a system that doesn't believe any of this, including some progressive movements? They don't believe in this. They say they do, but they don't. They do what they want to do. And we still have that hierarchy of who gets to make decisions. Are those decisions in line with what the majority of people are thinking? So we have to come to terms with this. Now, we've heard from three people so far: Lincoln from Mount Vernon, Jeff from New Jersey, David from Brooklyn. They don't know each other, and yet they're saying that they had to confront a very painful reality, that their sense of politics, they were able to define it. And as they defined it, at the center of their sense of politics, at the center of what it is they thought politics would be, was the notion that it's about serving the people, the interests of the people. But that isn't happening. It isn't happening with the old guard arrangement of Democrats and Republicans. It's not even happening even within the progressive world. But they know that something has to happen. But what is that? What is the evolution that we should all expect to undergo? And how would it accommodate our aggregate conviction that politics ought to be about something else other than, as David put it, an apparatus that sees to the needs of the powerful? They've got it organized. And we have induced ourselves into a kind of false labor. We're giving birth to ourselves as entities convinced that we know what we're doing, but we don't have the power to do any of that we want to do. An apparatus controls that. How do we change that? Does this actually pose a problem for us individually and collectively? Does it in any way force us to deal with these realities, or are we stuck with the idea, not the evidence, but the idea that we're something else politically? I think this is a very serious question, and we have to confront it at some point because it's picking up speed. You know, as most things going downhill, it's picking up speed. It's being given an air of legitimacy, because after all, we have voting, we have elections, we have a, quote, democratic, small d, a democratic process. But we know intuitively that as we see the needs of the people, as we see what should concern any apparatus of government, we see a huge distance between what the reality is and what they're telling us they're doing to fix things in this reality. I deal with this every day. Like most everybody speaking today, I developed a sense of a political appetite very early in life. My father was a very, very politically involved man. So we became aware early in life about politics and being involved in politics. But my father's, it took me a while to understand that my father's version of politics was very, very different from the established definition of politics. He didn't see, he saw it very differently. He didn't see it as, you know, like a clique looking to monopolize power. He saw it, government as he saw it, was really to be of help, assistance, making everybody improve. That's how he saw it. And then as I grew older and more familiar with systems, I could see what a great distance there was between his idealistic idea about politics and the reality of politics. It's very disheartening because, among other things, we aren't able to fix things, because that's what a system does. It scientifically organizes itself to not just exist, but to persist and to make it very difficult for anyone to create change. So I think we have to develop nonetheless a political consciousness, in that we ought to see and give ourselves permission to see it. What is it that we are here to do? What is this thing called politics? How is it that our society, we are part of society too, and how is this system able to pick and choose, you know, who gets the goodies? Well, it's able to do that because the vast majority of us don't consider ourselves as political entities with our own identity, with a clear understanding of who we are, both as individuals and as members of a collective. We're part of a community. We're part of some kind of system. We don't understand that. And we don't give it, the chance that it deserves to exist. We don't give our systems the chance to work. We don't support them the way we ought to. We don't, you know, bring in new blood. We don't offer our ideas. We don't move with our systems such as they are. Many of them are banged up. Many of them are not properly financed. Many of them have other kinds of problems. But these are natural problems, and we don't seem to say, well, okay, this worked. you know, the whole idea of community banking. It may not be perfect, but we should go back and revisit when it was kind of perfect and how did it work. People were able to buy houses. They're not able to buy houses easily now. Well, when they were able to buy houses, what was the system? Let's look at it and make it work. So I'm glad that we had a chance to at least broach the subject today. And more it will come to mind that we should, you know, take time out and just slow down and study things, because there's so much to learn. And I think it would help us a great deal to constantly develop the idea that we are political people, or should be. And we ought to understand this aspect of our lives in a way that we understand other aspects of our lives. But this is not a thing that happens, you know, election time. This is something that should happen all the time. Develop a political consciousness, a political identity, a political understanding. And particularly with an emphasis on how politics can be used to improve our collective condition. Thanks so much for joining me today. We've come to the end of the program. Tomorrow, as you know, is Free Your Mind Friday. See you then. Bye-bye. So they can do the waiting, cause I ain't hesitating. The future's round the corner, so for now I'm gonna play. Now's the time to wail. Not later, but